This is Philosophy versus Improv, where two sages try to teach each other a thing or two, and maybe you, the audience, get something out of it as well.
My name is Mark Linsmeyer, a lover of loving wisdom, who's a lover of learning improv.
And my name is Bill Arnett, an improv commandant, yet only a philosophy cadet, excited to grow in rank.
And our special guest today, introduce yourself.
Hi, I'm Anthony LeBlanc, and I'm an improviser, comedian, and I've worked a bunch of random jobs at different places, like Second City, and currently work at Nickelodeon.
And you had some academic stuff in there too, right?
Yeah. So my degrees are computer science and physics. That's what I double majored in college. So a lot of my philosophy things I did were through our honors program at Loyola University, New Orleans.
Was there a requirement? You had to do some Homer and some Republic?
Yeah, the Jesuits are cool in that way, where in high school, we actually had a philosophy. If you're a senior, if you're an honors student, your options were philosophy as an honors student or sociology as a regular student. So, and then the end of the year, we had to do a thing where we had to defend a topic in front of a panel for it to graduate. So my group of four people was war just formal means to an end was our thing that we had to do. But yeah, at Loyola, they require you to take a lot of things outside your major. So, and usually in a weird way outside, but attached. So a lot of my philosophy classes I took, some of them were science driven. So we had like a philosophy of science based class that we took. And then other ones were options, but a lot of my things I did take were around the idea of dealing with the moral and ethical implications of scientific research and work.
Okay, perfect timing with AI and gene
splicing. Yeah, well, that was my focus in school, actually, was AI.
Okay, there we go. This changes everything, Mark.
Yeah, so do you feel like...
Is AI the topic we're going to talk about?
Well, I was more inspired by what you just said there to wonder if you feel like advances in science, the introduction of AI, things like that, can inform ethics, for instance, or whether ethics is just, oh, it's principles. Even if we didn't have any of this stuff, like, yes, you have to apply them in different ways, but there's nothing fundamentally new or interesting that's going to be uncovered just by introducing a new, you know, ethically by introducing a new technology.
I think there are new things that come with ethically come from science technology. So the example I would give you would be something where it seems like it's not new, it's reapplication, but it is new because of having to deal with the idea of what it does. So for example, think about if transporters are real, right? On the Enterprise, the idea that if you are transporting someone, is that the actual person or is it a copy of the person?
You're for sure murdering them. You're for sure just
murdering them and reassembling them as a whole new person. Is the soul something that's reconstituted or not? Is it something that's physical in that space? So the idea of deconstructing and reconstructing a person, I think, is something that is a concept that I believe ancient or classical philosophy didn't have to think about as a concept, right? So that becomes a whole new thing that even though it is reapplication technically, it is a concept that they didn't even think about that as a thing. And so there's some of that stuff that becomes, you know, things that are completely new that you can sort of apply, but isn't exactly the same. So, you know what I mean?
The idea that technology, sometimes there'll be a technology that is just beyond our imagination. We couldn't have imagined what that would be like. Yeah. So how can we even, you know, now it may not change our ethics, but it certainly would challenge our ethics. Even 200 years ago, the idea of jumping on an airplane and being across the world was just not even in anyone's consideration. And now it's happening all the time.
And now we have problems of, can we just toss people that are loud or have smelly feet that they take their shoes off on the plane? Can we just toss them out? That wasn't even an issue.
Well, now this whole idea is like, is shyness a disease? Now that we have all this medical stuff and all these ways of changing people's DNA and getting given medicine and psychoactive. At what point do the things we always just accepted? Well, that's just how people are. Some people are shy. Some people are nice. Some people are this way. Some people are that way. When does someone's psychology become a disease? We wouldn't even have considered that without the advances in medical technology.
Mm-hmm. And it's one of those things with too, where you think about the idea of as you learn things and the ability to alter those things. Like for example, if we start to map out the brain and then we start to do things to alter said brain, how does that drastically change if we can chemically or physically augment people's brains themselves? That becomes a place where, again, not something you completely thought about in the idea of like, how much of a person is still a person when you start to change parts of them, right? That's a very different concept than just, you know, AI is something where I feel like is not far off from a classical idea of looking at animals or things we consider to be non-sentient like beings or things, and then can we imagine them becoming sentient, right? That's not new. That's old. But the idea of...
The musical, you know, cats.
Yes, exactly. The movie. Angela Weber is a fortune teller. But the idea, though, of, say, like, yeah, cybernetics is a thing where, like, that man versus machine thing versus man becoming machine is different. I don't think, you know, I feel like I don't remember a lot of classical things like, well, what if we become mostly a machine? You know what I mean? Like, it's more of like the idea of mechanical versus non versus like the idea of actual transition. Yeah. That's another place where it's like, didn't have that concept of cybernetics. That's a place where you see that thing take a new life.
I mean, Aristotle had that treatise on should you do the human centipede thing, and you know,
no.
They were against it back then. I mean, they didn't even have staple guns.
How many views you get, and, you know, how well constructed the
how many likes? It's worth the likes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Can we get a whole franchise out of it, or are we just doing one off? If it's just a one off, maybe not, but a franchise or human centipede.
No. There are three of those movies, weren't there?
Three? The trilogy.
I missed the third one. I didn't get there.
I feel like there's a third one. I might be wrong, but I feel like there might be a third one.
I think there is. I think
there will eventually be if it.
Yeah. The intent all along. This was a story that couldn't just be told in 2 hours.
It was complex.
I did see one and two, and I'm very ashamed to admit that, but sometimes I'm in a mood where I just have to see some just absolute shit.
Yes, there are three human centipedes. There's the first sequence, a second.
Yes, and I recall the second one went meta. It's like a guy saw the first movie, and then he does a thing at a prison or something.
Yeah.
Oh, wow.
And I believe involved the actor from the first, like got one of the actors from the first one now playing himself as an actor, but as a character in the second one.
Wow.
If I remember correctly, unless that's the third, and I did in fact see that, but.
I only saw the first one, sort of.
And then that was enough for you?
That was enough. I was like, cool. I get the idea of this.
Yeah.
Been there, done that.
Number two had a very gritty, terrible aesthetic of like the first guy was a surgeon and was all pretentious. The second guy literally is like, I got a staple gun and I work at a prison.
Well, I think it's a fascinating commentary much on how life is. We see celebrities, we see athletes, and we imagine that we could be them. You know, oh, I could be if anyone got in a fight with me in a bar, I've seen enough karate movies. I bet I could beat anybody up at a bar, you know? So I think this human centipede movie is actually tapping into this wish fulfillment that we all experience the
business of
Walter Mitty, you know, fulfillment that we all feel from time to time.
of wanting to be God, of wanting to exert domination over our... That's what Walter Mitty was wondering about.
Mm-hmm. So nice wordplay with fulfillment, by the way.
Yes. And human centipedes. Correct. Yes.
We can't be too clever in our improving here, or you would be writing or acting, really. Anthony, you're on strike now.
Yes, technically. So the weird part is that my job I actually have on my sets is not a union job, but I am part of SAG as a union member. So I am on strike from the acting part of my world and job. and all everything shut down. So I was working up until actually this weekend, because with the writer's strike, we actually got 8 episodes from our writers before they struck, and we were able to shoot 7 of them. And then basically once this happened, it was like, well, we're going to pause until we're done.
There we go. So, well, you let us know if any of this violates your...
Improv is never covered by any of these things. That's always part of the weird, fun thing of, like, as you know, Bill, the gray area of improv. No one wants to touch it. Writers Guild, we always tried to at Second City talk to them about stuff. They're like, no, thanks. Even like the Directors Guild, when it came to like theater directors, are like, no, thanks. Like this whole weirdness of improvising, they want nothing to do with it.
I'm sure I've told you in the past, Mark, sometimes if you go in to audition for a television commercial, they may give you a script and then they may ask you, oh, just riff out a few ideas just so we can get a feel for your stuff. And it's like, no, they are willing, ready, and able to steal anything you just riff out at the audition without giving you any credit. At least that's the grand fear of all. I have yet to meet anyone in that world, and you may have. Anthony, he was like, oh, we totally changed the commercial based on what this one auditor auditioner.
Sometimes we'll see that in callbacks. We're like, all of a sudden, like, the callback weirdly includes a lot of this thing that I feel like a lot of people made that choice, probably.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Because that was the correct improv choice to make. It made it funnier.
So I think we've now put enough distance between us and talking about Human Centipede that we can start an improv scene.
Never enough distance.
You just put it, you know, at mouth to ass to it just now again.
Can we set up a thing? So as has been depicted, since we haven't explained the rules yet, I typically come in with some idea of a philosophy thing, but I like more recently listening to what the guest says, being responsive and coming up with the topic on the fly. And Bill has probably run out of improv lessons, but supposedly has something now to guide us on. Do you want to start us on a scene?
I do have something, but I can't start. This is kind of a rethinking of kind of a classic improv thing. And I think, well, maybe we can chat about its deeper ethical philosophic conversations. It's a classic improv thing that sometimes can be a bit of a panacea. That's it. That's all I'm going to say. I just can't start. I would rather do it rather than explain it.
All right.
Mark, you want to get us rolling?
Ah, God, that I never get used to that. The fucking transporter is supposed to just bing. Fuck. I feel like every single cell in my body was twisted.
It hurts. It's like you're on fire.
It's not good.
Yeah, you should check and see if the Heisenberg uncertainty principle regulator is correct. Sometimes I can get a little bit joggled in there, but, you know, we take care of it. That's what us engineers do.
You think we could engineer something where it doesn't also introduce salt into every cell?
It's disgusting.
Burn? It's like lemon juice in there. I mean, can we put a lemon juice filter?
Well, it depends on what the atmosphere is like. You know, so that's the danger is that whatever's in the atmosphere, when you beam up, comes in with you and we got to filter that out, but we don't get everything.
I wasn't being literal. I don't really think you're putting lemon juice. It just feels like there's lemon juice.
Yes.
Depending on the acidity of the actual planet, it could feel like lemon juice.
Yeah. I think we got to start when we do the beaming down. We can't beam right into the throne room. It doesn't look good. I had to really just kind of clench my teeth and say, hello, really good to meet you when it's just burning. I mean, is this really how it's supposed to be?
You got to be ABSF all the time. Always be Starfleetin'. That's what they learned at the academy. You got to always be ready, no matter where you show up. So, you know,
Anthony, you're a fine engineer and you're a credit to your department.
Why, thank you.
How often do you use the transporter?
Well, I never use a transporter. I would never do that thing. What are you talking about? Oh, man, I'm a very, very spiritual person. And I would never step in a transporter because if you get in a transporter, you no longer have a soul.
Okay, but you're comfortable removing the souls from Mark and I every week.
Oh, yeah, because you guys aren't actual people who believe in a higher supreme galaxy.
Is that what the pain is? The pain of wait, if my soul is already gone, does it come back and then it's leaving? Why is it? Why?
No. Once you transport once, you're forever soulless. So that's why I'm saving myself for my flannel transport into the great galaxy itself.
Bill, I think this is like a virginity thing. I think this is like, oh, I'm saving myself for.
Well, no, it's not a virginity thing. Right? The virginity has something to do with the idea of, you know, procreating and that kind of stuff. This is about becoming one with the universe.
Okay. Saving yourself. I see. Okay. Mm-hmm. Well, that sounds like something that someone who's never transported would say. I'm going to say that right now. You sound a lot like someone who hasn't transported.
Well, I'm just saying that I'm saving my matter to energy conversion for the great universe itself.
All right. I mean, you have a special transporter in the Niagara Falls area that you will be. Okay. I understand.
And only a select few of us will ever transport in that way. It's a predetermined number of 5,555 people who will eventually be able to allow their matter to convert into the energy that will be the saving grace of all of us.
And where do you find that many people who have never transported?
Oh, we've all chosen to not do that. It was chosen by the universe. It's just the way that the universe has planned out. I am number 455. And I have been very patiently waiting for my chance.
Mm-hmm. Well, Anthony, I just need to say that our ship, the Lexington, will be going into dry dock here in the next month. This might be news to you as well, Mark. We're all going to have to leave the ship, and go to the neighboring station. Not sure if you've got a plan.
Oh, I shuttlecraft everywhere. That's all. I shuttlecraft everywhere.
When you were training, how did you like get to school? Wait, you got to walk out your door? You use the transporter that's in?
I'd walk out my door, get onto my shuttlecraft, and I would shuttle all the way to San Francisco. I'd then get out, go to the academy, and do my classes, and shuttle on back.
Wow. Takes a lot of time. A tremendous amount of time.
It's worth it. You know what? If you had to rush it, would it really be worth it? I'm patiently waiting.
I think you're going to find that it's not that good, you know, the first time you transport. It's just...
it's the only time you transport, it's going to be great.
Okay. And not that it's good even doing it as many times as we've done it, but it's way worse the first time.
I'm just saying that if it's more about even just the anticipation of transporting is enough for me sometimes. You know, I just think about the idea of like when I do disassemble myself and the universe absorbs my energy, just that oneness I'm going to feel, it's going to be insane. It's going to be exhilarating experience as I ascend to a higher plane of existence as only energy.
Okay. When you find that special transporter and that special place to be transported to, mm-hmm. it's going to tickle and tingle and then burn a little bit on the other side. But that's probably going to be it.
Well, maybe it's only doing that for you all because you're just doing it willy-nilly. You're just doing it all the time. You know? Like maybe if you had a little bit more, you know, presence of mind, a little more thoughtfulness and mindfulness when you transported, you might actually be able to have a very different experience.
I was more thinking if we had an engineer that would like calibrate the Heisenberg shit to make it not burn every time we do it on this ship in particular.
So my scientific and engineering abilities have nothing to do with my belief system. I would be offended that you think that would be anything different. I am a professional, and I am a person who adheres to all the rules of Starfleet. So I can do my job and make sure you can transport as much as you want, whenever you want, whenever way you choose to do it. And it have nothing to do with my opinions about your transportingness.
I think that I'm not even sure if that's possible. I'm not even sure if you truly are being loyal to your beliefs, if you're allowing others to sin.
I think you're sabotaging this shit. I think that's why it burns, because your moral disapproval is bleeding over into your job performance.
Look, no one can be saved who doesn't want to be saved. That's my opinion. Now, you can make your choices, and that is your choice to make. You can transport all you want. You can transport from here to there. That is your choice. But you know what my choice is? Don't only transport once.
Every time Gary transports me, all right, mm-hmm. the poo-poo and pee-pee filter works perfectly, and I arrive mm-hmm. completely empty. But every time mm-hmm. you transport me, it's as though you've unticked that box on the menu, and I always arrive with a full bladder and a full...
Yes, of course, because what if some part of you that needs to come there is trapped inside of your fecal matter or your urine?
I want it out.
When does that happen?
It's so convenient.
What if I was smuggling drugs and I ate them and they were in my digestive system and they were in my colon and I need the drugs to get there? I'll let you know if that's going to happen, but that's not the norm. That's only about 10% of the time.
Let's say that you get here and it turns out that fecal matter that did not transport happened to contain a clue to why your illness is progressing so fast to coming from that planet. Because you ate something, consumed something on that planet. We no longer have that information. We have to bring all the data with us because data is important. So it is not a mistake. It is me being more diligent than Gary, because Gary is bad at his job.
I think Gary respects the defaults that I set on my preferences.
Bill, I think Gary just like collects the stuff though. It is, I think Gary's got something going on too. I mean,
can you, Anthony, reroute pee and poo?
Yeah, you can reroute anything anywhere.
Yeah.
Do we need to hack his log file and see?
Well,
it should just be, I hope it's just sent off into the universe as disassociated matter. But if he's like reconstituting it somewhere for his own use.
That would not surprise me if that was what Gary likes to do, because Gary is a person who has some very particular quirks about him. So that's all I'll say, because I don't judge people about
engineers' code.
Who they are.
Okay.
Yeah. Unlike you members of the away team trying to go out and, you know, make all judgments about people and what they believe and what they don't believe and whether they can do their jobs or not.
Correct. That is exactly what we do. You nailed it.
And I think we do need to schedule a audit of the logs, because not only am I concerned about various fluids or whatever being transported to people's personal stashes, which really I don't object that much. I've been just letting it go with Gary, but also duping. You know, if a copy of me ends up in somebody's room, I'm not cool with that.
Well, I mean, we would never copy someone. That would be against Starfleet regulations.
But don't like we copy them every time we transport them?
Well, copy as far as copy and keep. Now we do hold your pattern in the pattern buffer. But once you're transported, that is no longer retained. We don't make more copies of you. That would be unethical. And if nothing else, Starfleet never does anything that goes against ethics.
Except transport people on a general basis. But okay.
Rip their souls out. Yes. Look, here's the thing. I intentionally, Mark and I were down on that planet. They had this all-you-can-eat buffet, and I intentionally ate things that I knew would irritate myself and overate, explicitly with the idea that the poo and pee filter would be on. And I am feeling horrible right now, let me just say.
Well, then maybe you should take yourself to sickbay, and that will take care of that in the most proper way and not abusing the technologies of the starship for your Romanesque gorging of yourself.
I think Bill's got to get there pretty quickly, and I think it would be good if you went with him. In fact, if you transported yourself to sickbay, it would really, I mean, there might be some kind of mess.
I can transport him right there.
I think that you should go with him. I think you should get in the transport.
I am not allowed to transport myself. I have to work the transporter in order to transport the person who was on the transport.
I mean, it's just you stand. I could do it. I mean, you just stand there and go.
You can't do it. That's not your job. That is not your job.
Get a stick.
Everyone has to reach over.
Here, look. Yes.
It's not something you can do.
Several levers.
You have to have a certain certification. If you do not have the certification to do that,
here,
do not touch
I'm
that.
I'm just
get your hands off of it. Get your hands off my
Bill, what's happening? What's happening to you?
Control panel.
All right.
I'm in a sick bay right now.
See, it totally worked. Let's end that.
Yeah, we'll step for the close.
That was the least traumatic way you could have ended that, Bill.
Well, I gotta say, Anthony, so you touched on something that, as someone who I would not call myself a Trekkie, however, I've probably seen a good portion of the material, but I have yet to come across a species or you correct me if I'm wrong here, who has something what we would describe as a religious ethos that isn't in the way of everything. It's like, oh, well, that's what a wonderful ethics these people have. We can actually learn something from them. No, it's always your beliefs are stopping us from achieving our goals.
A lot of that happens. Or the weirdness of, like, you know, there's a lot of, and this is the thing I've actually recently talked to someone about, especially the original Star Trek still has a little bit of its colonialism attached to it because of just the era it comes from, right? You're dealing with Cold War topics, you know, and it's just that whole thing of, like, so there's a lot of, like, we are right and you are wrong, and we're going to make you better.
Anthony, what is love?
Something is so infinitely ahead, you know, or something so infinitely ahead of us that we can't quite, get it kind of world.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. What is love?
Instruct me in a first person way. That's not the next scene. No more Star Trek.
Yeah.
So I've been trying to think whether, like, with the eugenics thing,
Noonien soon,
probably if something is wrong with the new technology, it was already wrong with the old technology. Right. It might not have been obvious, but, like, you know, Plato was theorizing about doing eugenics on we want to breed the best guardians for the city. So we're going to control births and we're going to do all this. We're going to tell everybody from the same generation that they're just brothers and sisters. And we're going to do a fake lottery. Who gets to breed this time? But we'll fix it. So only the people who we want to breed will be picked. But nobody will feel bad about it. They'll just think it's bad luck. So this kind of shenanigans, even though, you know, you couldn't. In fact, it seems like the fact that you could change genetic code without that sort of deception now that it might be gene editing, it seems actually, if anything, you know, maybe more permissible to do this kind of stuff. Whereas before, at least the practical matters made it infeasible. But it seems like we've had something against changing ourselves artificially or whatever, whether it be using natural means. You know, you could do that with animals, but not with people. Like, we've had that. The new technology doesn't necessarily, it changes the logistics is all.
We're not animals, we're people. We're different.
That's right.
And I would say there's a difference between, for most people probably, natural selection of like attraction and certain things create certain byproducts of what we believe to be an organic, you know, the best people match with the best people, and that result is the best matching because those original parents saw something in each other to then make a good pairing, right? Or whatever it may, or, you know, that weirdness, that concept we have. But I think that, you know, the two things that definitely challenge that in our modern world is, I think, the concept of how we see differently abled people. Like, being a person who's autistic 100 years ago would be something that you'd want to genetically get rid of, right? Where now there's a very different approach to the idea of something being different. And is this something that is good or bad or neither? And so I think that our views on genetics, I think, in the, especially the last, like, you know, 15-ish years, has changed a lot because of that. I think that how we see humans who are differently abled and their worth and value being something that is assumed versus being something that is taught to some people is very different. I think back to like being in high school and talking about genetics and the idea, like, you know, this is the 90s and that being really hot thing with the cloning sheep and stuff like that, yeah. You know? And how different, the conversation isn't even close to being the same now because of, I think, that difference of, I think very quickly in the late 90s, early 2000s, especially, there was that kind of push of like, why would you want to change your child? Like, why would you want to do this? What are you saying is wrong with your kid and how it was born? You know, outside of the, you know, the obvious hardships and medical things and financial things.
We're kind of dancing around kind of a free will kind of a thing, you know, and I'm sure I'm positive philosophers. That's a whole other topic. But if I am the same after being transported, what is free will then? If I could be patterned and written and reconstituted precisely as I am I just a collection of experiences and genetic predispositions? Anyone else with that exact same predispositions and experience would do the same thing I would do, where you could make a copy of somebody, you know?
Mark, forgive me as I, you know, go back to my very limited honors philosophy world, but one of my favorite papers I ever wrote in college was in my classical epic classes. And we had to pick using classical epics to define and explore some kind of philosophical topic. And mine was about fate and free will in the ancient world. And I specifically use Oedipus and some other things to play with that. But the thing I attached it to in that paper specifically was being a Black person from the South. And the idea of exploring the concept of fate is just the free will of other things that has come down to you in a place that you then no longer have control over. And so using the idea of slavery being a thing of like, I had no choice as to where I grew up and where I exist, but it was the free will of people who took the people that I am descended of to bring them to this country and make it where I am now, an American who has certain things and lives in a certain place. And that kind of concept of, you know, in that paper I wrote, and this thing I still do believe, is this weird dichotomy you have of understanding that it was someone else's choice to do these things to you that you don't have any choice about now. Like, that has become a part of your fated world.
Sure.
But still gives you the power to believe in and understand that in the microcosm of what I'm doing right now, I can still have free will to make changes, even if it rages against that thing. And that feels like an overwhelming fate. That's not wrong. I should be crushed by that. In my daily life of trying to make it better, it's still worth it. And the idea that hopefully my free will becomes a better fate for other people.
The common thread in the several things that have been thrown down here is, do advances in technology change our perspective on moral issues by forcing us to come to terms with something? So when we couldn't do anything about somebody being autistic, then it's like, all right, well, we have a social issue of like, how do we take care of people like that? Or how much do we shun them? That's a perennial issue, but we couldn't actually do anything. It's only when genetics comes along and says, well, yeah, you could actually erase that if you want, that we actually then as a society have to say, well, do we want to? Like, it wasn't a question before.
The hypotheticals are now becoming a reality. When my wife was pregnant, she was over the age where they want to do some additional tests. And they were like, we're recommending a HD ultrasound. At the time, this was the thing. We were kind of like, well, we just want to have an HD ultrasound to know what we might be seeing and help inform some of the choices that your caregivers and you as parents might make. And the whole time we're like, it was all very roundabout way of saying, essentially, this can detect any number of deformities while the child is quite small, while the child is still a fetus. And it's like, if you would want to make any decisions regarding abortion, now is the time to do it. And again, it's this thing that, like, in the past, we could theorize, imagine a world where we could detect if a child would be sick or have some disability or differently, a different ability before they were even born. And now it's like, honey, what do we want to do? You know, it's like, we actually have the ability to do that. So these hypotheticals are now hitting us in the face.
Mm-hmm. Let's stop for some sponsor messages. Every day you decide who you're dressing up as. In your shirt, your jacket, your shoes, you're crafting a message to the world. And sometimes clothing's meaning can be surprising. Articles of Interest is a podcast about what we wear. It's a fashion podcast for people who are passionate about clothes and for people who think they don't care about clothes at all. Every other week, host Avery Truffleman reveals the wild stories hiding in your closet. Why do baby clothes have pockets? How did latex become taboo to wear? Can we actually know the labor conditions of garment factories? Is there such a thing as fashion separate from capitalism? Get Articles of Interest on your favorite podcast app.
And I'll say, just to go in that world of like what you said, Mark, about technology, and this is another thing I have thought and talked a lot about, and the idea of broadening our idea of what the concept of technology is. There's a fun, it started from a fun show that I did, an improv show actually, where it was called, it was like this connections type show where the person had to do a fake lecture, involved two topics. And the topic I got was the Renaissance. And I specifically did a speech that was basically connecting the Renaissance to Harlem Renaissance. And the idea of technology, the Renaissance is born out of the idea of the mass acceleration of enslavement of people. You know, that you basically took all the labor and work off of finding a new world and then freed you up to get resources and things and stuff that then allowed you to like really advance society in a certain way because you weren't doing all the manual labor of discovering all these new things. And the idea of, you think of something like the cotton gin being something that greatly alters how people see slaves based off of the efficiency, their tools, until there's a better tool that comes along. You know, to a certain degree, too. It's a part of that overall picture. I mean, it's not just it, but that industrialization is a thing that does change how we view slavery and its use. And so there's an interesting world where, you know, you think about technology and advancements in technology also altering how we view humans and people. Like, that's a large part of that.
AI script writing, current strikes are around all that. It was just something in the news about, oh, what if we just scan a bunch of people into a computer and use them as background actors and pay them $200 and for their likeness for the rest of eternity? Sometimes we kind of deify technology as it's always advancing, and advance means better for all of us. But no, we're just advancing that branch of the technology tree is advancing, but it could be to the detriment of society or the detriment of other people. Yes, and sometimes advancement and progress means good for everybody, right? That's what that means. Progress means good for everyone.
Like, not really. We discovered this whole new place that people already live on. And we're going to we got all these awesome things. Remember these tomatoes? This thing, what's that about? It's like, oh yeah, he killed a bunch of people to get that. Cool. It is a thing that that was actually a little bit of why specifically, you know, at Loyola, one of the only required philosophy classes we had to take outside of like an intro to philosophy for science majors was that philosophy of science class, because it was supposed to lead you towards an idea of thinking ethically about like the choices you're making. You're at least grappling with the idea of, should I, shouldn't I do this? Or how should this be done? Or is there a best way to do this thing? And let's talk about it. Now, we might come to the same conclusion we had before, which you're at least working in a space where you're not just blindly doing things.
Yeah. Well, I'm trying to think how freedom fits in with all this. And, you know, I can at least say that changes in not just technology and building machines, but as you were saying, changes in techniques. The fact, like, we're going to use slavery now, like, that is a technique. Changes that counts as technological in the broad sense, that these all change how we understand freedom. That I feel like fate, you could talk about fate now and like, oh, I just feel so unlucky, bad things keep happening to me. But it seems more and more irrational Whereas in the olden days, when you just couldn't really control anything, like the weather is fate, but now we can predict the weather. So no, it's not fate. It's stupidity if you don't look at the predictions or you don't do them right. And even somebody, who knows if some other country is going to just come and take me as a slave. It's just fate. It's just luck because of just the profound ignorance and lack of communication and being able to see if something bad is coming.
Or even the lack of ability to change your world dramatically, even up to 300 years ago. How many people up until 300 years ago, well, I was a farmer, my folks were farmers, their folks were farmers, and their folks, and we lived in the same village in France for hundreds. It's like, why would it even occur to me that I could do anything else?
Yeah.
You know, it wouldn't even cross your mind.
Yeah. And that's one of the things when I try and explain to people what institutional X is, like that idea of if race gets hard for you to understand, that is the example I use of like, for many years, people did the same job in the same village because they didn't know, they didn't have a choice because they didn't have any better, they didn't have anything that showed them something different.
Yeah.
And so that becomes a place of where when the system itself pushes you to a certain direction, can it be different? Yes. But how much effort and energy has to be put into that thing to make it different? And yeah. How many people possess that energy to do that? And how much, you know, it's that critical mass kind of world, or escape velocity is another way of explaining it. You know, the idea of like, it takes so much to get a ship off, like, to break the gravity of this planet. Like, there's so much energy that goes into that. It's the same when it comes to institutional whatever, racism, yeah. Sexism. There is so much energy that goes into that, that most people are just so crushed by even the thought of it, that they stay where they are. And that is the power of what institutionalized things do. That's why the royalty and monarchy worked and does work for so long, you know, and
yeah.
Now it's
all over the world. Yeah.
And now it's more that corporate, or, you know, the idea of influence and money, the oligarchy world is a thing, an autocracy. That is a thing that is now our monarchy. It works.
Yeah.
Like it is hard to look at that and be like, why can't I win against this person in court? Why am I ever going to sue them?
Well, this has given me an idea for a scene, but I don't necessarily want to be the one to start this one. So I can
start it, and I can chat through our little video conferencing thing to somebody if they would like to do my job was, which it was pretty subtle. It would have been pretty hard to see.
All right. Tell Anthony, he's the guy who can actually handle it.
Now, Anthony, I will be removing your free will.
Thank you.
With this choice.
Or as an improv, we call it giving a gift.
Exactly. I would invite you to shut up. I would, you know, but this whole way we can, yeah. I'm giving you the gift of letting us all know we don't like you. So you can, yes.
With this new technology, the gun that I'm pointing at you, I give you new choices.
That makes sense, right?
Yep.
That's yeah. Okay. All right. Whenever you're ready, Mark.
So I was thinking that, you know, in terms of a next quarter product launch, everybody's crazy about the, you know, when the queen died, they're all just queen, 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 queen. Can we capitalize on this? Can we get a queen in every home? Because how popular would that be? How much people would appreciate having, oh, hello there, you know, somebody, so that soothing presence in every single person's home.
Okay, I can see what you're saying. I see what you're saying. Uh-huh, I get that.
Would it be a real human?
I mean, we've got the data. We've got the data. So there's a variety of ways. You know, you've seen Black Mirror. You kind of know how this works. We can make the little queen homunculi, you know, because, I mean, this was, we you're kept her alive. Queens. Oh, yeah. Oh, the queen.
Oh, okay. Okay. I thought you were a queen and I thought we were queening people. I thought we were
No. I'm not saying there's no substitution. I mean, if people thought that everybody could be queen, then like those suckers wouldn't have the monarchy still.
So just, you're suggesting taking Queen Elizabeth II, her DNA, somehow turning into tiny leprechaun people that would then live
queens.
Little baby queens that would then live in everyone's home. I just want to get right on the same page.
I mean, I think it could be a variety of form factors. Some people could just have the consciousness on their phone.
So it'd be like Elizabeth. Hey, Elizabeth, please open the door for me.
Yes.
And she'd be like, oh, yes, I will do that. It is my decree to open the door.
Yes. Or you could do, as Bill was just saying, the literal, you know, make mini versions. I was thinking like a queen / Pomeranian mix, because that would be so cute to have her little face on a little cute dog that just follows you around and like, oh, pip, 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 ch- Cheerio.
Okay. Okay. Am I the only one who sees this?
Beastars. Beastars is a great anime. I don't know if you've seen that. It is awesome. Seeing like little anthropomorphic human people.
Yeah.
I
mean, stop. This is like wildly unethical. We can't be making these I'm assuming these creatures will have enough awareness to be aware that they are alive and sentient. Yeah. Well, yeah. Well, what happens to the one that's like, I don't like what you're asking me to do? I don't want to do what you want me to ask.
Duty. I mean, the queen was if she had problems, you know, doing what she was told, she wouldn't have been queen that long. She would have just retired. But she was duty. I don't think you could do this to just anybody. I don't think we could have mass produce Bill. Sorry, Bill, you and your rebel ways. But I think Elizabeth, I think she'd be happy to help you with.
Well,
you
know, find she's it. Also as royalty, that one Himuchus could make a choice to go and, you know, live in America for a while, marry who they want, do what they want, you know, as long as they are model citizens. That sounds great.
And we could do like a reality TV show based on that. That sounds
so ethically, everyone would be able to like do what they want, have that free will to make their choices. But the ones who really want to serve, they can serve.
No, that's a terrible idea. What if people mistreat their queen? What if people do terrible things to their queen?
I mean, they wouldn't do that. They're loyal.
What
citizens.
If I have a queen in my house? What if I make me and my two neighbors? You make a royal centipede with our queens.
That would be treason, sir. You would be taken to the tower. Yeah.
But I think Bill, you're bringing up a good point that maybe. In addition to the queens, we need some of those tall hat guards.
The beef eaters?
So the beef eaters come with the queen just to make sure you're not messing with the queen. But the beef eaters would also be the indirect slaves. I mean, I think we could lease these.
You said it. You said it.
Whoa. Well, you're dropping the S word real easy around here. I did not say.
I mean, services. That's what I meant. Services.
They're
serving the queen gladly.
Yes.
Wow.
Services that we provide as a company to the customer, but they would really work for us is what I'm saying.
I'm thinking is that we should maybe think about anybody who is someone who's worth cloning. Who is really, really, you know, we think we would love to live forever. They also love being among the people. We should maybe just start by thinking about cloning all those people and getting agreements with them, going to talk, sit down with them before they die, see what they might be into, what they're cool with, what they're not cool with. And then we can just have a whole exact industry around cloning celebrities to be able to have them as part of your household. Like they become a part of your family.
Will they need food? Like, will they need clothes? Will they need to
eat? I mean, that would be their choice. Do they want to eat?
Their choice?
Do they not want to eat? Yeah. I mean, as far as like the person who's getting cloned, that could be like, hey, I want to be able to eat all the time. So that's you get that. If you're getting an Elvis clone, like that's the candidate. He has agreed to. But say you're going to get like a Kevin Hart clone, right? Then that Kevin Hart clone wants to be able to perform on a regular basis and make jokes for you. And that's what you set up. If you want jokes, get a Kevin Hart.
What about real Kevin Hart?
Well, this is after he's dead. Like, I think maybe we have to make sure that after they're dead, they have given us the ability to clone them in perpetuity.
So they can't profit from themselves.
Oh, no. Well, they think, their estate can and their family can. They can set up a trust. But I feel it'd probably be weird to like have, you know, real Kevin Hart and fake Kevin Hart around. Who do we know who the real one is, right? The real one has to die.
You got to watch your Black Mirror, which is where we get a lot of the ideas. And that Miley Cyrus thing that, you know, where she was alive and they were cloning her and putting her in every home. They're like, that's bad.
You're aware that Black Mirror is satire, right? You're supposed to be horrified. You're supposed to watch it and say, oh, no, I hope that doesn't occur. That's the point.
I am horrified to the point of doing it the right way.
Right. Exactly. Oh, come on. It's their lessons on how to avoid. It's okay to have like a memory implant, but just don't obsess about the people your wife has had sex with. Don't make her show you that footage. Like, duh. It's nothing wrong with the technology. It's just, you know, don't be an asshole when you're using it.
The Black Mirror is just guardrails. That's all that is.
Well, it is very healthy guardrails to keep us from going down the wrong path. Bill, I appreciate that you are the moral compass of this company. And that you do the best to make sure that we are doing everything we possibly can to be an upstanding entity. So
listen to me. You don't get to applaud.
Every word is gold. It's like gold is coming out of your mouth. You just drop these golden nuggets everywhere.
I'm so glad, Anthony, we ordered this philosopher, that we have a philosopher on the company, because to have somebody, you know, providing that service to us, who works for us.
I think Bill should get a raise. Yeah. That's what I think. I personally think Bill has proven his worth so many times in this place that I think we'd have no choice but to give him more money. And maybe promote him to a VP of some kind.
And maybe give him a couple Kevin Harts to follow him around.
Some ethical hush money. Ethical hush money. That's what you are so happy I'm around, but don't actually do any of the things I dropping gold that you all admire from afar, but never, wow.
Oh, I feel like I've done so many things that you've said. My entire home has been completely remodeled to make sure that I am composting everything that possibly comes out of my home. Whether it be, you know, trash, waste, unwanted things, you know, we just compost everything there. That was because of you, because you were saying that the wastefulness was the bane of human existence.
So we're going to make a bunch of extra mini humans. That's the plan.
Well, that's why we don't waste the corpses anymore. We use all the buffalo. We use all the queen now.
Mm-hmm. Wow. Wow. Does this VP position come with a parking spot?
Oh, of course it does. Private entrance.
Okay.
That's where we never see you.
Just to enforce the NDA, you will be followed around by two beefeater Pomeranian Kevin Hart heads. I hope that doesn't horrify you.
I'll have a private entrance so you'll never have to see me.
No. We are in the private entrance. That's where you never saw us.
Oh, okay.
We all come in the private entrance. That's what comes with the nice parking space. VPs and up. We come in our own parking spot, drive right in, right to your office.
Okay. All right. I'll think about it. Yeah, we'll stop right there. We'll stop right there.
There you go.
That was a fun one. That was ridiculous. And I'm glad we could get all that double speak, all that corporate double talk in there. And I'm sure, Anthony, you get that served to you at every conversation, email, letter. Here we go. Anthony, I know you mentioned you're working for Nickelodeon, and I'm sure I am positive that there are some great people over there and some.
Oh, they're great people.
And I'm also, there's probably some bean counters who get a little bit too obsessed with counting beans, maybe, and that affects their decision making. Do you think when the corporate doublespeak comes up, we're so thankful for having you here, yet we will never do anything, implement anything that you. Well, are there people, do you think, who just don't get it, who just don't see it?
It's true about everywhere, right? Like,
sure. Any
industry. It's no different than being at Second City, right?
Yeah.
And the idea that there's a mixture of humans who are always concerned about the creative in the best way. Mm-hmm. And there are people who are very concerned about the money in the best way. And hopefully in an ideal situation, those people balance each other out and are able to listen to each other, but able to come to compromises. And so I've lucked out on a lot of the shows I've worked on, especially at Nickelodeon, where I've had or seen that play out in positive ways, where it was just like, I want this. And it's like, well, you can't afford this. Well, can we figure out a place in the middle where this thing works and you still get what you want, but we can afford it? That's how it ideally works. But, you know, in all the places, there always is going to be those folks who have to a little bit justify their job or do the things where they, so, you know, for, you know, the place where I say, like, if any kind of corporate world, it has that, but I would say specifically in entertainment and kids entertainment, there's a certain thing around the idea of, there's a certain term around the idea of repeatable actions or things that, like, if a kid can see it and imitate it, it's imitatable actions that becomes a thing that you're liable for. And it is interesting when you get those emails about, oh, that kid in the sketch can't put the crayon in their nose because in the end, you know, if a kid watches that and put a crayon in their nose, then we get in trouble, right?
Yeah.
And there's a mixture of that when you put it in that concept, which makes it where it's like, I hate this, but I get it because I'm sure some kid's going to do it and that's going to be weird. You know what I mean? It does put it in a different perspective when someone is like, well, the legality is technically around something that's supposed to be a good thing. But you know, when it comes to something about the using of a name or just like the color of something, and it feels like someone's just like exerting their want to give a note, you know, that sometimes doesn't feel good. And I feel like, and the place that feels worse, I think sometimes is, I love working at Second City. It was, you know, I worked there for 17 years. You know, it's the longest job I've had. And the thing that would frustrate me sometimes is when some humans, and I said this a lot of times in meetings directly to people who own the place of like, hey, we use and abuse our hopes and dreams against people sometimes. Like the idea that like we know what we are and that everyone wants to work here. We're a great place, but then we exploit that to a certain degree of like how long many people work or paying your dues or whatever it might be.
Yeah.
And so sometimes in meetings, it would be interesting of seeing people say like, yes, and and say something that's totally negate the thing that someone
said.
and use that weaponize the idea of yes anding something to basically shoot something down.
Well,
and then you feel like an asshole if you like say something against that.
Against it. Like, well, I was literally going to say, could that idea of imitatability, as you were saying, be weaponized against like, well, those kids were like hugging each other, and I don't want a kid to imitate someone being nice to a gay person. You know, it's like, I mean,
and that's where you become a place where your overall moral or compass has to, and it has to be written into your code of conduct. That's what you have to have a code of conduct, and allows you to be able to say no to things or yes to things. And I would say, like, you know, that was one of the things of being interim EP of Second City. You know, when we're going through that world of trying to work on in our HR materials, we didn't have a code of conduct that didn't exist until 2020.
Yeah.
And that being something like, how can that be the case when this is an entire place built off the idea of, you know, a certain philosophy and ethic around collaboration, all these things? Like, it amorphously was there, but it wasn't reflected in how we actually executed the policies that we had at Second City. And so it was up to people to adhere to that or not. And some people did. A lot of people did. A lot of people were great at that. Some people weren't. Some people weren't always or didn't do it all the time. You know, and that's a human, that's part of human nature when it's not something specifically is there to tell you to do said thing. And so I think
and now that we have the technology to put the thing there to tell you to do said thing every minute of the day, then that'll change, you know, with your own contracts.
That is true. One of the things I do like, though, about, and this is when actually when I, to be honest, like when I was, you know, internally running Second City, I would always constantly mention Nickelodeon a lot. Because I think Nickelodeon, one of the things I walked into, which was kind of amazing, is that there was a large culture shift in the company from, you know, the previous president to the current president, who's an awesome guy. Like, Brian is an awesome dude. But just this idea of, I remember over and over, one of my main jobs is I work on set with the kids on set, is that casting and talent would always say that the kids are the most important thing. Like, you, whatever choice you make, your choice should always come down to, are you doing what's best for the kids on set? That was 100% a thing that was pushed and I saw play out, and was also part of the, I think, the landscape of a very different kids television world than, like, say, even like 15, 20 years ago, right? Yeah. This idea, this concept, and I would bring that back when I went to Second City of, like, there is a philosophy here about, we are a kids television program that has kid actors working with us. So our, everyone's job, everyone on crew, everyone on set's job is to make sure that first and foremost, the underage folks on set are having the best experience they can have from start to finish. And that is your job. Whether it's how you talk, how you speak, what you do, how you behave, you know, and everyone does it. You know, once you kind of put people to that question of, like, hey, do you want to be the guy who's talking about horrible things in front of this 8-year-old child?
Yeah.
Like, what are you, dude? Or you're yelling at somebody and being a total jerk, and this person as an adult, you wouldn't treat that child that way. So why are you treating that grown adult that way?
Yeah, once they're 18, you can be cruel and exploit them all you want, but they're children. They're children.
Yeah.
Well, and now that we have the new technology that every 8-year-old will just be on their phone 24 hours a day. So anything adults say doesn't even matter around them anymore, because they'll just ignore you and pay attention to their phones.
Funny. But yeah.
That's fun. That's a good mindset. It makes perfect sense at a place like Nickelodeon or anything involving children. But then the second you try to apply it to something outside of children, the people we work with are there to get as much out of them. They're not our collaborators. They're not our partners. They're not our... Yeah.
it was funny. Even yesterday, I was talking about, someone asked me a question of, like, oh, are there any celebrities that are, like, weird? And I said, actually, not a lot. Because, like, again, when you come on a set with children, it's hard to be the asshole who's being demanding and weird when they're children. People want the best behavior. Like, you see an interest change. Like, oh, hey, they always talk, you know, always nice.
Yeah, that's fun.
So instead of a queen in every home, we should have a child in every home.
And child in every home.
Everybody will behave. they'll want to be. I think the time has come, Bill, to reveal, to me at least, I guess you revealed to Anthony, what was the improv trick here? What was the lesson?
The improv trick, which can often be a bit of a panacea, is this idea, certainly agreement. You know, we've at some point talked about yes and at some point, Mark, or even the fact that, I'm not saying beyond yes and, but we just, this idea that we all want to be here. But this idea that what I said is, I want you to agree with the other person over the top, to the point that you're taking over their idea. to the point that you believe it more than they do. I think sometimes when we say yes and, or just as Anthony mentioned, yes and being used as a cudgel, as a wall around your terrible idea, as a defensive measure, that people will just say it and leave it. It's like, no, you have to live it. You have to push it to such a degree that you are trying to take over their thing. The only way to prove that you understand their idea is to take it on yourself. Now, again, is every improv scene, you know, we can have a big discussion about that. But that was today's lesson. That was today's lesson. Mm.
So that was a little more difficult with the first scene when I started very hot for you to then take that. But I did like that it wasn't both of you shitting on the idea or whatever. It was only one of you, such that in the second one, yes, Anthony took the cloning thing to new places.
Further places than you may have had in mind.
And I was hoping to get it to a point where he was going to go, oh, he was going to turn it on me. Like, No.
let's put some brakes on that.
Wait a second. I just want the queen. But then, you know, some of your ideas were so good. I just had to.
And then the fun part was trying to then, I don't know if that was the direct assignment, I assumed it was trying to also figure out how to play that with you, Bill, of how to do both of you and try and agree with you as well. So that was part of what I was trying to do with both.
And that's interesting. Quite interesting. Yeah.
Oh, okay. I thought you were just being sarcastic with him, or condescending, I should say. You're the token philosopher that we paid to work for the company, and we're going to pay you a lot of lip service and nothing else.
In the end, that's what it became, because I thought that was the way that worked the best with his character of doing that same mission of like, I'm going to overagree with you, so I basically just negate you.
I think your character probably didn't even realize how condescending he was being. He probably had idea how rude and cruel he was actually.
He's that guy that says like, oh, I give all, it's like, oh, I mean, I eat Chick-fil-A, it's so good, but I give, you know, all LGBTQ things all over the place, so you know, it works out, it balances out, you know. It's that guy who thinks he's doing all the great things,
or just does everything right with money but everything wrong with their personal actions and interactions with people.
Correct.
We have reached the point where Anthony, you now, I don't know if I clarified this before, but you're the judge. We've had this competition between a philosophy lesson, this sort of incoherent talk about several different areas in philosophy of technology, and then this improv lesson that Bill has brought forward. Which of the two, you can decide today, which of those two lessons has emerged triumphant, will make the biggest impact on you and the world?
Oh, well, I will say that impact on the world becomes a thing of like, unfortunately, you probably know where this is going. When it comes to just, you're a slave, apropos of the day, to the moment, right, of what is the thing that's going to, I think, dominate our world for a while. And I think that philosophical conversation is the thing. I think that lesson-wise is, even though I will say, which is interesting, is that I don't know if you intend this to happen in the end, though, Bill, but some of the things from what we were doing did apply in that world of, like, the yes-anding nature that happens with technology is part of the issue. I think that we follow that rabbit hole of trying to innovate and do the thing and don't really stop to think, hey, should we? Or how should we? Right? We just start, yeah. And all of a sudden now the thing's taken over and it's killing us and it's crushing us in an apocalyptic, you know, Skynet. But I think that that world of technology and how we really, the advancement of it and how it affects us and how we view the world and how we view being a human is big. It's weird to say, as people then keep saying over and over, like Fran Drescher's speech that she made is very important, even though it feels like a bunch of like a rich Hollywood person saying a thing. It is like how she said it was important. I thought it was important for them when they said the background actor part. I was like waiting for them to drop a thing that was going to be like, you got to put something in there that's going to make sense to everybody. And that was when it was like, there's no human in the world that could be like, what, you get to scan me and then keep my likeness forever and I never get paid for it other than the one day I did it? Like, no one in the world is going to be like, that's cool, you know?
Yeah.
Can you do that? Can you say that in the voice of the nanny? Can you say that in the voice of...
it's unconscionable! that's been the interesting part where I think even the WGA didn't do as good of a job of really putting into context everyone can understand of, like, what the AI script stuff was. Like, people have been doing that after the fact now of, like, I've seen so many articles and so many news things where now they're talking about, like, if you're a lawyer, AI can just write your brief or can write a brief for you. So then why do we need you? You know what I mean? Like, or all these little things of where, you know, you're seeing that place of like, oh, people understand, like, getting paid one day for a lifetime of work. Like that's the thing that just doesn't compute with humans anymore.
Yeah.
And so I think that there's going to be a real nexus point, I think, for us right now to think about AI. I will say, and I'm sorry for my ramble, I'll end this with this as far as my ramble goes. Being a person that my focus was AI, one of my AI teacher, the professor who did my most important classes for me, his job before he took that job at Loyola was him and a partner created a lot of the logistical systems for the first Gulf War. A lot of that stuff got used as how places like Walmart and Target, how they do their, like how they put things on the trucks using adaptive things, which is a huge part of distribution now. He was a part of the team that created that. And his whole thing he always pushed to us was the fallacy of AI right now is that we keep trying to make things can deceive us as being human versus being things that can be the best machines that they can be and the best tools they can be. Because his whole thing was that in the end, something is always a tool. A tool doesn't have morality to it. It's the people that use the tools that add that thing of how they use it or don't use it. So if you make an AI more human, then inherently you're introducing the morality of the person on top of a thing that should just be a tool.
Yeah.
You know, you're giving someone a tool that they don't have. They have like lost their ability to have choice over how to use it.
Yeah.
Because your choice has been implanted on top of it to it by nature. And so that, you know, it's interesting, you know, that Tim talking about that. And I think that's the thing that we're, you know, we're kind of hitting now, that idea of AI is a great tool and it can be used for greatness. I don't know if human beings right now have the moral ability to handle what they need to be to really possess that tool in its full nature.
Sure.
And I'll say this going back to my Renaissance comment I made earlier and this bringing it full circle. And the idea that the best version of AI or technology is that we are training the people whose jobs they're taking to be the people who create and run and maintain that thing, the minimum. And hopefully it also frees those people up to do better and bigger things that they're not stuck in that field doing it.
Yeah. Right.
So that the people of Europe who now become wealthy merchants because the black and brown people are making the things for them, we don't create a world where those people that are doing that thing now don't have the ability to rise up above that thing as we replace them with something else that's a machine. Sure. Mm-hmm. Now, fast forward, do those machines come sentient? They're just the slaves of us. Who knows? Question mark.
Yeah.
That's why we shouldn't make them human.
And on that note,
philosophy won.
But the world loses.
Yeah. Well, I got to say, Anthony, it was fantastic talking to you. And you are uniquely placed, not only with your background in all aspects, education, vocation, and who you are as a person, and what's going on in the news right now with the strikes and AI and whatnot, absolutely uniquely placed in this moment to be with us today. That was fantastic.
Yeah. In fact, maybe let's, do you want to just take over for Bill? Do you want to just, for season three?
No,
just...
I can never do that. No.
Maybe write a program to take over for him.
Oh, yeah, I would. That I can do.
All right.
GPT.
Well, I sure learned a lot from both you guys today.
And I learned a lot from both of y'all.
That was awesome. This is great.
As seen.
If you enjoyed this, get more at philosophyimprov.com. If you're hearing this on the Partially Examined Life feed, please go subscribe directly to the Philosophy vs. Improv podcast so you won't miss any episodes. And you'll see our whole back catalog of episodes in that feed. While you're on the Apple Podcasts site subscribing, please leave a nice rating and review of this podcast. Better yet, avoid all the ads. Here are post-game discussions for nearly every episode and experience the video for this and most other recent episodes at patreon.com/philosophyimprov. Thanks so much for listening. Bankrupt.